The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Ow, ow. Yep, you guessed it. I'm a speed bump, so I've got one job. I slow you down. So imagine how I feel about GEICO, who does way more. Like, not only could they save you money on car insurance, but they've been around for over 75 years, giving people fast and friendly claim service. Ow, ow. Plus, they got a nifty mobile app that gives you 24/7 access. Ow, ow. Just doing my job, buddy.
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. In election upset now, what's next for Republican Roy Moore?
Do the right thing, Roy. It's time that we heal.
Also,
the battle over internet freedom.
Later, the big screen story of a pioneering newspaper publisher.
She made history.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Roy Moore still hasn't conceded after Democrat Doug Jones won the Alabama Senate race in an election that sent shockwaves through the GOP.
We are indeed in a struggle to preserve our republic, our civilization, and our religion, and to set free a suffering humanity. And the battle rages on.
In a nearly five-minute video statement, Republican Roy Moore refused to concede Alabama's special election after being defeated by Democrat Doug Jones.
It's as clean cut as it's going to get.
Jones says senators from both parties and even President Trump called to congratulate him.
We talked about finding that common ground to work together, and he invited me over to the White House to visit as soon as I get up there.
Alabama's Secretary of State, Governor, and Attorney General together have until January 3rd to certify the votes before an automatic recount can be considered.
This has been a very close race, and we are awaiting certification by the Secretary of State.
Steve Flowers is Alabama's leading political analyst.
Roy Moore has said it's not over yet. Does he really have a case for a recount?
Under Alabama law, he really doesn't.
Jones says he's leaving it to Moore to reach out to him.
I would say do the right thing, Roy. It's time that we heal. You know, it's time that we get together.
It's not the first time Moore has refused to admit defeat. As Chief Justice of Alabama's Supreme Court, he refused to follow a federal court order to remove a monument to the Ten Commandments from the courthouse. Later, he rejected the Supreme Court's decision legalizing same-sex marriage. He was removed from office both times. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Birmingham.
Republicans in Congress hope to vote on their tax plan as early as Monday. President Trump was optimistic Friday.
I think we're doing very well on the tax. We'll see what happens, but I think we're doing very well. It's something that's going to be monumental.
Democrats say the plan benefits the wealthy and corporations the most and throws scraps to the middle class and low-income families, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
It's a monumental con job.
It appears Senator Marco Rubio will support the bill after Republicans agreed to include a bigger child tax credit. However, it's unclear whether ailing Arizona Republican Senator John McCain will be able to vote. Amid concerns over his health, former Vice President Joe Biden comforted McCain's daughter Megan in an emotional moment on ABC's The View.
Former Vice President Joe Biden offered words of encouragement for Megan McCain, whose father is suffering from the same cancer that killed Biden's son Beau in 2015.
The thing that I found was, and Beau insisted on, your dad's going to insist on, is you've got to maintain hope. Mm-hmm. There's hope. Hope is, you have to have hope. I swear, guys, we are going to beat this damn disease. We really are.
Senator John McCain later tweeted his appreciation, calling Biden a source of strength for my own family.
The department has been unable or unwilling to change.
1 week ago, McCain was in place as the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, but the 81-year-old has missed five roll calls. He's battling glioblastoma, the type of cancer that killed former Senator Ted Kennedy in 2009. In September, Senator McCain told 60 Minutes about the diagnosis that's now being treated with chemotherapy and radiation.
It's a very poor prognosis. So I just said, I understand. Now we're going to do what we can, get the best doctors we can find, and do the best we can.
Biden said he is encouraged by new treatment options for glioblastoma, which he said is as bad as it gets. He said the doctors and scientists are actually injecting the cancer with viruses and getting closer and closer to figuring out how to crush these kind of tumors. Jan Crawford, CBS News, Washington.
The FCC voted Thursday to roll back Obama-era net neutrality rules.
It is not going to end the internet as we know it.
FCC Chairman Ajit Pai led the party line 3-2 vote to roll back the rules that, among other things, barred broadband providers from blocking or slowing access to content. FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel harshly condemned the proposal.
I dissent from the corrupt process that has brought us to this point, and I dissent from the contempt this agency has shown our citizens in pursuing this path today.
Court challenges to the rollback are expected. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein defended Special Counsel Robert Mueller on Capitol Hill Wednesday.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee pressed Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein about whether Special Counsel Robert Mueller should continue to lead the Russia investigation.
The reason we have special counsel is because of a conflict of interest. And then lo and behold, those who are supposed to make sure there are no conflicts of interest seem to have a few of their own.
Republicans are questioning Mueller's political leanings after hundreds of text messages surfaced Tuesday between two former members of his team, FBI agent Peter Strzok and FBI lawyer Lisa Page. In a text from 2015, Strzok calls Bernie Sanders an idiot like Trump. In March 2016, Page wrote, "God, Trump is a loathsome human." Strzok responded, "Yet he may win." Strzok was removed from the Russia probe when the texts were first discovered over the summer. By that time, Page had already left. Rosenstein says there's no reason to fire Mueller.
Democrats questioned Rosenstein about President Trump's role in the investigation, including his firing of former FBI Director James Comey. They also asked about the possibility of arresting the president on allegations of sexual misconduct.
I would have to know the facts and I'd have to evaluate the law. I've never prosecuted a case like that in federal court, Congressman. But if you have an allegation by any person at any time, you should feel free to submit it.
The FBI has launched an internal investigation into the anti-Trump text messages. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Omarosa is on her way out of the White House with a resignation effective January 20th, according to White House officials.
Omarosa Manigault Newman says stories surrounding her departure from the White House are 100% false.
I was not escorted. I did not cause a disruption.
Three sources tell CBS News Mr. Trump's chief of staff, John Kelly, informed Omarosa she was being forced out of her communications job, but could stay on until January 20th and say she resigned. The one-time star of The Apprentice denied she was fired on Good Morning America.
John Kelly and I had a very straightforward discussion about concerns that I had, issues that I raised, and as a result, I resigned.
Sources tell CBS News Omarosa tried to renegotiate with Kelly, and when that wasn't successful, she tried going to the White House residence, where she tripped alarms and was escorted from the building. Omarosa's official title was Director of Communications for the White House Office of Public Liaison, and she was one of President Trump's top aides. She says some people had a problem with her 14-year relationship with Mr. Trump.
Certainly, I had more access than most, and people had problems with that.
President Trump tweeted, "Thank you, Omarosa, for your service. I wish you continued success." Omarosa says when it is time, she will have quite a story to tell. Nikki Batiste, CBS News, New York.
Still to come, French President Emmanuel Macron talks with Jeff Floor. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Prosecutors say the man they accuse of trying to blow himself up in Manhattan was radicalized after emigrating from Bangladesh to the U.S.
New York City bombing suspect Akayed Ula told investigators he was inspired by ISIS when planning his suicide mission.
He allegedly selected the location and timing to maximize human casualties.
The 27-year-old immigrant from Bangladesh is charged with five federal counts of terrorism. Prosecutors believe he was radicalized in 2014 and built his crude pipe bomb about a week ago.
Like many others before him, we allege he was inspired by a group that exploits technology in an effort to spread a violent ideology.
Court documents say Ula posted an anti-Trump message on Facebook Monday. During a search of his Brooklyn apartment, bomb-making materials were found and his passport.
With handwriting that included one particularly chilling note, and I quote, "Oh, America, die in your rage," close quote.
Ulla came to the U.S. in 2011 on a visa available to some relatives of American citizens. President Trump says family visas are incompatible with national security and is calling for immigration reform. Meg Oliver, CBS News, New York.
The first contingent of U.S. Marines sent back into Afghanistan's turbulent Helmand province to tackle a resurgent Taliban are set to return home. Our Kemi McCormick is in Helmand province, where she talked with the U.S. commander there, Brigadier General Roger Turner.
Last April, when the U.S. Marines redeployed to Helmand province for the first time since 2014, their job was to help stop the Taliban's momentum here.
The Afghan security forces were really suffering badly in 2016. They had given up a lot of ground and a lot of territory to the Taliban. The Taliban were pushing hard against Lashkargah right outside of the provincial capital.
The Marines provided air support for the Afghan security forces and also training and advising and new equipment to track their forces on the battlefield. And Brigadier General Roger Turner says that made all the difference.
Confidence begets confidence, and then they feel like they can win.
The Marines watched and assisted as the Afghans worked to secure areas in the central part of the province.
I think when we got here, they only controlled, the government of Afghanistan really only controlled about 14% of the population in Helmand. Now we're at about 40% of the population here. So they've taken back a lot of territory from the enemy.
The American support, Turner says, also had an impact on the Taliban.
All of the things that they said they were going to try to do in 2017, none of them they accomplished.
But Turner says the Afghan security forces still face challenges.
How much territory can they take back? And then their capacity to hold it. And then does the force have sufficient capacity to be able to control this much terrain based on the numbers of personnel, the amount of equipment that they have ready and that sort of thing. So that's the tension that we face here.
Turner is supportive of President Trump's new South Asia policy, especially for its conditions-based strategy.
Powerful for our partners, and it's powerful against the enemy. Because I think if you put yourself in the enemy's perspective right now, or in his shoes right now, he's seeing that this is an enduring thing. This is not going to end necessarily in 2017 or 2018. He can't just wait this out. If the pressure against Pakistan is successful, then we could see a degradation of foreign support for the Taliban happen, and then that really would put the Taliban in the horns of a dilemma here, where they would have to do something different than with what they've done in the past. And so I think it's powerful against the enemy, and it's also powerful for our partners.
Kemi McCormick, CBS News, Helmand Province.
French President Emmanuel Macron tells CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor about how he is leading efforts against climate change after the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord.
How much has the withdrawal affected your efforts?
I think the withdrawal, to be totally fair with you, created a huge momentum to me to create a counter momentum.
You say you're in better shape now because of this withdrawal, that the president
did you a
favor? I
think today we have a momentum because I think we have two phenomena. The withdrawal of the U.S., which for me is a mistake, but it creates an impulse for a lot of others to say, okay, we have to react and do something because it's impossible to leave the floor to a sort of dismantling of the Paris Agreement. Second, a deep wake-up call for the private sectors and some others to say, wow, so we have to react. If we decide not to move and not to change our way to produce, to invest, to behave, we will be responsible for billions of victims. I don't want to be a leader in such a situation. So let's act right now.
He says he's open to renegotiation.
You have more than 180 countries as negotiators. I'm not ready to renegotiate with so many people, I'm sorry, around the table. The U.S. did sign the Paris Agreement. It's extremely aggressive to decide on his own just to leave. And no way to push the others to renegotiate because one decided to leave.
You think he'll change his mind?
Yes. I mean, I'm not ready to renegotiate, but I'm ready to welcome him if he decides to come back.
How often do you speak to President Trump?
Look, as often as we need. For instance, during the past weeks, we had probably 3 to 4 phone calls together. We have a very fluent and open discussion.
And you would characterize that relationship as friendly?
Yes, very direct.
You talked about Jerusalem.
Yes, exactly.
Before.
Yes.
And he said what?
He said that probably he will announce the fact that he wanted to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
And you told him what?
I told him I thought it was a mistake. And that such a unilateral decision is not compliant with our international discussions and our international rules and will not facilitate a peace process.
Was that a calm conversation? Was that a confrontational conversation?
I think it's always an open and direct discussion. You can agree to disagree, which is the case between us on some issues. I mean, he told me the rationale of his decision. I told him that for me it's not the right announcement, but at the end of the day, you decide for your own. And he decided for the U.S., I decided for France, which is normal.
In your estimation, does it jeopardize the peace process?
So my first obsession, I would say, and my first concern is to preserve peace and calm in the whole region. Second, I think we have to discuss with all the parties and try to find a way out. But obviously, the reaction of the Palestinians will not be very positive. They are not in the good mood to progress towards any peace process.
The smaller scale attacks, like the one that happened in New York City, they've happened in France as well. How do you prevent those?
You prevent them by increasing your intelligence. You can prevent them if we are much more aggressive, I would say, in order to reduce the propaganda of the jihadists and the terrorists on the net. On top of that, if you want to prevent this kind of behavior, you have as well to better take care of your people and help them to find a place in your society.
Mr. President, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Up next...
So now we're going to make a fantastico dish.
Sexual harassment allegations hit the kitchen on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio podcasts are now on Spotify. Listen to great shows like Face the Nation, the CBS News Weekend Roundup, CBS This Morning, and more. They're all from your Spotify app on your iOS or Android device. CBS News Radio on Spotify, the leading global music streaming service, now lets you find the right podcast for every moment. Open Spotify to listen to CBS News Radio podcasts today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. About 100 Democratic women in Congress have joined calls by some of the women accusing President Trump of sexual misconduct for a congressional probe into the allegations. Some have also called on him to resign as the president takes aim at New York's Kirsten Gillibrand.
It was a sexist smear attempting to silence my voice.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was attending a bipartisan Bible study when the president sent his suggestive tweet, calling her a lightweight and flunky who once begged him for campaign contributions and would do anything for them.
I think it was shameful.
Democrats called the president's words
nasty
and
grotesque.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren even accused him of trying to intimidate and slut-shame Gillibrand.
I think only if your mind is in the gutter would you have read it that way.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders insisted there was no innuendo.
He's obviously talking about political partisan games that people often play and the broken system that he's talked about repeatedly.
More than 100 House Democrats had signed a letter requesting that the House Committee on Oversight investigate the reports of sexual misconduct raised against President Trump by more than a dozen women, stretching back to the 1980s.
Forced kissing, unwanted touching and groping on an airplane, in a corporate office, in a pageant dressing room.
Democrats forced out two of their own members last week over similar allegations.
I'm sorry, Mr. President, you do not live under a different set of rules.
But the party that controls Congress,
what we're in charge of here is the Senate,
does not want to touch the issue.
Should there be a formal investigation?
I thought that's what the last election was.
Gillibrand says she won't stop trying.
Republican leaders have been reluctant to even acknowledge the allegations against President Trump. Why do you think they'd be willing to open an investigation?
That is the right thing to do, and I am urging them to do that, and as should their constituents.
Late Tuesday, the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee officially declined to open an investigation, but for an unexpected reason. He said that the allegations against the president, if true, constitute crimes and therefore are better handled by the Department of Justice than by Congress. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke says he's responding to harassment and discrimination.
I'm Peter King. The department's own report says more than a third of its employees say they were harassed or discriminated against last year.
It's time to acknowledge that we have a problem.
In an agency video, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke calls harassment and intimidation a cancer left over from the previous administration.
I've already removed four senior leaders that were guilty of inappropriate behavior. And I will remove 400 more if necessary.
Peter King, CBS News.
So now we're going to make a fantastico dish.
Five women have accused celebrity chef Mario Batali of sexually harassing them. Now he's been taken off air by ABC from its daytime cooking chat show, The Chew. Batali also says he's stepping away from running his business empire. He's reportedly worth at least $250 million. New allegations against Harvey Weinstein have surfaced.
The 2002 film Frida was a labor of love for Salma Hayek, and she says she was thrilled when Harvey Weinstein agreed to distribute it. But in a New York Times op-ed, Hayek revealed, for years, he was my monster. The actress said she said no to Weinstein's requests for massages, showers, and sex. But her refusals drew Weinstein's rage. During one outburst, Hayek says Weinstein threatened, I will kill you. Don't think I can't. Hayek also claimed Weinstein threatened to shut down production unless she agreed to do a fully nude sex scene with another woman. I had to say yes, she writes, causing her to have a nervous breakdown the day the scene was shot. In a phone interview with CBS News, Frida film director Julie Taymor described the turmoil during production.
Harvey was constantly undermining confidence for Salma. I think what Salma's article does is goes beyond the sexual harassment.
New York Times reporter Jody Cantor helped break the Weinstein story.
For the women who were victims of Harvey Weinstein, the behavior they describe is really consistent. It varied in severity, but the overall pattern we hear again and again and again.
Weinstein wasn't the only famous man to face accusations Thursday.
PBS overreacted and they launched a sloppy investigation.
PBS indefinitely suspended distribution of Tavis Smiley's show after they say an independent investigation found multiple credible allegations of misconduct. Smiley responded in a Facebook video.
I have never groped, inappropriately exposed myself, or coerced any colleague in the workplace ever in my 30-year career.
And filmmaker Morgan Spurlock came out Thursday and admitted he is, quote, part of the problem. In a Twitter statement, Spurlock said he sexually harassed his former assistant and had sexual relations with a woman in college who accused him of rape.
Bianca Golodrigo reporting. New warnings from a former Facebook insider about how social media is shaping the country.
We kind of knew something bad could happen.
Chamath Palihapitiya, a former Facebook executive once in charge of user growth, now says he has tremendous guilt about the social network he helped build.
We have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works.
And it's influencing the next generation. Studies show 92% of teens go online daily, and one in five young people regularly wake up in the night to send or check messages on social media.
People need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. Bad actors can now manipulate large swaths of people to do anything you want.
He's not the only social media executive blowing the whistle. Former Facebook president Sean Parker recently said the initial goal was to get people hooked.
You're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. The inventors, creators, understood this consciously. And we did it anyway.
We have to hold the tech industry accountable.
Jim Steyer is founder of Common Sense Media.
They, in many cases, have ignored the consequences, some of the downsides of some of the innovations they brought to our society.
You don't realize it, but you are being programmed. It was unintentional. But now you got to decide how much you're willing to give up.
In a statement, Facebook pointed out that Polly Hapatia left the company more than 6 years ago, and a lot has changed since then. Facebook also said, quote, "We've realized how our responsibilities have grown, and we're working hard to improve." Carter Evans, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, the finishing touches and security features of the new U.S. Embassy in London.
Even a hedge will hide steel and cement bollards capable of stopping an 8-ton truck.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The U.S. Embassy building in London is preparing to open next month. It's the most expensive ever built at $1 billion and also the most secure.
Philadelphia-based architect James Timberlake says the design was inspired by European castles. It even has its own moat.
It is not a moat, but that was what the moniker was put on it at the outset of the competition. It's a pond.
Well, that pond is deep and wide enough to swallow any truck bomb charging toward the building. And that's not the only hidden defense copied from medieval times. Like Windsor Castle, the new embassy sits on a hill set back from the street by over 100 feet. It will eventually be planted with tall grasses, and a waterfall disguises another defensive wall. Even a hedge will hide steel and cement bollards capable of stopping an 8-ton truck. Part of the huge expense was a very modern 6-inch-thick blast-proof wall, laminated layers of glass manufactured in Germany, then sent under guard to the U.S. for further construction, then shipped back to London.
It is beyond doubt one of the most advanced buildings in the world, but even in comparison to other U.S. embassies, it carries a hefty price tag. Ambassador William Moser says that's the price of security.
When we build an embassy, it's for a 50 to 100-year commitment. That's the nature of the business that we're in.
The star-spangled neighbor, now just across the river from well-known buildings that really have stood the test of time. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, London.
The National Retail Federation estimates two-thirds of us returned something during the holidays last year. I don't imagine this year it'll be much different. Donna Rosato is senior editor at Consumer Reports. Donna, which stores have the most lenient return policies?
The good news for people shopping this season, there are a number of stores that are pretty lenient if you want to bring something back. So at Consumer Reports, we poured through a lot of these of their policies, which you can find online, and we found some really generous retailers. Nordstrom often tops the list and does again this year. They have no formal return policy. They say we handle things on a case-by-case basis, but they are known to be very lenient. They have no time limit on when you can return something. You don't need to have the tags on, unless it's one of those fancy special occasion dresses, and no receipt is required.
What about returning big-ticket items, especially electronics? How difficult can that be?
Well, it depends on the store, of course, but there are a few things that are more that even with generous return policies, there are exceptions. So you see that on very high-end electronics, again, like sort of like special occasion evening dresses. You see that with jewelry. So there are some things that most stores do make exceptions for.
Lots of us are doing our shopping online these days. How often should you expect to pay the return shipping cost if an item was bought online?
Well, for the most generous stores, again, we see that with Nordstrom, L.L. Bean, Bed Bath & Beyond. Those are folks are pretty generous. But for some retailers, they will charge you a shipping fee if you want to return the item that you bought. So again, if it's something that you want to check in the policy, you could ask when you're buying. You can find these return policies online, but it's definitely a part of the fine print. You want to make sure that you understand.
Should you worry about returning too much?
You know, there are those serial returners. I think we all know people like that. But as far as we've been able to determine here at Consumer Reports, we're watching these things and reading through this stuff. There is nothing that says if you return frequently or regularly, nothing at least spelled out, that would flag you to the store. The more important thing, I think, is to look at a store's return policy. And if you really think you're going to buy something for someone who's tough to please, you probably want to go with one of those more generous and lenient retailers.
Consumer Reports Senior Editor Donna Rosato. Thanks, Donna.
Oh, you're welcome.
More momentum to prevent food waste.
On most days, the one hot meal Charlotte Moran's two young children rely on is the free food served at this church.
It helps my family out a lot. We always have the church to turn back on.
The meal is prepared with donations, including extras from some of the nation's biggest restaurants.
This could feed a family.
Chef Aaron Harvell from Olive Garden showed us the soup, sauces, and lasagna the restaurant often gives away. She says they're not leftovers, they're unused, still fresh surplus that otherwise would have gone to waste.
Is it safe to say this would end up in the trash?
This would definitely go in the trash.
It's estimated U.S. restaurants throw out 22 billion pounds of food each year. Olive Garden is just one of a number of major restaurant chains trying to change that.
It's edible food. Somebody could eat this. You could take this home right now and have it for lunch today.
A number of other restaurants, including Panera Bread, the Cheesecake Factory, and KFC, also donate food. The surplus items are handed over to charities like Table to Table. It's then transformed into hearty meals at organizations including St. Augustine Church in Paterson, New Jersey.
If we didn't have these donations, we would probably be closed.
Closed?
Closed. And if we wasn't open, people wouldn't be eating in this area.
Moran says she's filled with gratitude.
I wake up every day to a loving family, not only my family, like to the world.
And a community that's helping her family get by one meal at a time. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, Paterson, New Jersey.
New efforts to detect breast cancer.
Alexis, sorry.
Stacy Herkert has a family history of breast cancer, so she makes sure to get a mammogram every year.
When my mom was diagnosed, she made us promise that we would go annually for checkups, and we do.
Like many women, the 54-year-old has dense breast tissue, which can make screening for breast cancer challenging.
Women with dense breast tissue have more white glandular tissue on the mammogram, so the background appears white. The problem is, breast cancer also appears white.
Down the center.
Herkert is taking part in a study at the University of Southern California, testing a new three-dimensional ultrasound called SoftView to try to help doctors more accurately identify cancer tissue. The patient lies on their stomach, and the breast is placed into a warm water bath. In 2 to 4 minutes, the machine scans the entire breast using sound waves.
There's no radiation exposure, and there's no compression of the breast.
Researchers are enrolling 10,000 patients from 8 sites across the country, including here at USC.
Researchers are comparing patients' mammogram results to the SoftView scans to learn the machine's effectiveness.
There's no exam that's 100%, but we want to be as close to 100% as possible.
If the technology is proven to be effective, it could eventually be used in addition to annual mammograms. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
I'm Spartacus!
I'm Spartacus!
Coming up, the newest additions to the National Film Registry on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS News Radio podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand, or hear original audio programming like our weekend review show, The Weekend Roundup. Get politics, policy, and a side of pop culture with White House correspondent Major Garrett on our newest show, The Takeout. Get these podcasts and more from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Two of the stars of the film The Post, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, talk with the CBS This Morning team. The movie focuses on the Washington Post and publisher Katherine Graham's handling of the Pentagon Papers.
I love this movie, and what strikes me is that it's so relevant for what's happening in the country today. Go Tom Hanks, go Meryl Streep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did Steven Spielberg, he said he wanted to make this year. Why was that so important?
Well, let's speak for our boss, shall we? Here's what he meant by that.
Yeah.
Well, the first time anybody saw this was in October. Liz Hanna wrote a movie about Katharine Graham and the Pentagon Papers when the next president of the United States was going to be a woman for the first time in history.
Yes. Yep.
Things were altered by that. So, but when we read it in February, mm-hmm. we thought, well, this...
We knew what had happened.
Yes, yeah. we had watched the CBS Morning News and was aware that we were in a whole other type of, sort of ripped right from today's headlines, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Meryl, tell me about Katharine Graham. The evolution she goes in this movie, and this is an extraordinary moment, but also an extraordinary moment for her.
It was 1971. It's when you wouldn't be in front of the camera, you wouldn't be in front of it was a world of men, really, except maybe for your mom. Mm-hmm. I remember what a big deal it was when Barbara Walters broke on to the Today Show, maybe, or This Morning Show, and everybody was very disgruntled, and her co-stars were grumpy about it. It was a world of men. The news
and chimpanzees.
On the Today Show.
J. Fred Muggs got on national television before they allowed a woman to be on national television.
That's true.
Though they'd been in newspapers for years, the chimpanzees.
But she was the owner publisher of the Washington Post, and she was one of the few women. Who was in that position. So when a decision came whether to continue the sort of publication of the Pentagon Papers, which had been begun by the New York Times, which was the preeminent paper at that time, it came down to her to decide, and she felt alone in that position and was... put on the spot. And
Liz Hanna, who wrote the screenplay, as you said she wanted to show that she was vulnerable, but she was not a victim. I thought that was a really good way to describe what we saw.
Well, our movie is dedicated to Nora Ephron, who is also a great journalist. And she always said, be the heroine, above all, be the heroine of your life, not the victim. Mm-hmm. And that's something, I think Katharine Graham stepped into a moment of history where she made history, mm-hmm. and she had a lot going against her in that time. Yeah, That's part of our story.
This week in 1971, it took on three major topics that seemed to never go away. It was Katharine Graham becoming Katharine Graham, and all the issues of equity and equality that go along with that, as far as gender goes. Mm-hmm. The government. Trying to keep essentially the truth secret so that they could continue to obfuscate what was really going on the ground in Vietnam, as well as a type of attack on the First Amendment, that the freedom of the press, that we thought we were sort of making a museum piece. We had no idea. We were a bit surprised that all three of those would be
but
so
But I think that's why Stephen wanted to do it this year, especially was because of the siege on the free and independent press.
And let's talk about that, because it's eerie to hear President Nixon, and I'm told that that's his actual voice that we hear.
Nixon is
great. I thought that was amazing. I thought, God, they got a great imitator.
He's stealing that from Bob Odenkirk's joke. But isn't he great in the movie?
He's really good, Tom, but some of the lines that you hear Nixon say are exactly, Tom, what we hear today from the President of the United States when it comes to the press.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was excoriating Neil Sheehan, who was a great New York Times investigative reporter who found the Pentagon Papers and got contact with Daniel Ellsberg. And Nixon went after him specifically. Yeah. And we see this repeated where the press is in jeopardy. I mean, when the state goes after the press, it's a very dangerous situation in a democracy because it gives license all around the world for this to happen.
And I don't want to give away too much of the film, but there is at the end this moment, of course, when the decision comes down from the Supreme Court.
You don't want to give it away? Then why is it so prominently displayed over there in the graphic?
Oh, that's right.
Court rules for newspaper 603, spoiler alert.
Where the Supreme Court stands up, for the press.
That gave me goosebumps,
the press is there
that moment
to serve the governed, not the governors. And I loved hearing, Tom, that you guys actually had the Pentagon Papers on the set.
They were scattered everywhere. The shoe box that had 200 pages of it in the scenes where we're going through all 7,000 pictures, those were the
On the floor of the living room.
And it's extraordinary to read them because individually there's no bombshell that is found in it. It is a collective weight of ongoing knowledge or evidence or testimony to the fact that the Vietnam War was unwinnable, we should never have been there, and this was all going on at a time, I think, in 71, over 30,000 soldiers had been killed, and how many of them?
It made me think about those families, too, to hear some of the lines in the movie that they died for nothing, really. They knew that this was a wrong thing to do.
Well, they knew that it was not winnable. And the great line is that it was fought basically 10% to help the Vietnamese, 20% to contain China, and 70% to save face.
Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia has lifted a 35-year-old ban on cinemas, prompting celebrations from film fans and movie chains.
Cinemas in Saudi Arabia banned in the early 1980s, pressure from conservative Islamists, Saudi society discouraging public entertainment and public mixing between men and women. That's changing, but don't expect any showings of Indiana Jones. The government says films will be censored to make sure they remain in line with values and principles in place and do not contradict with moral values in the kingdom. It says it expects to open more than 300 movie theaters with more than 2,000 screens. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
If you build it, you will come.
Baseball classic Field of Dreams is one of 25 movies the Library of Congress is adding to its National Film Registry for their contributions to American culture. Others include...
I'm Spartacus!
Spartacus, which broke Hollywood's notorious blacklist. And La Bamba, which told the story about the first Mexican-American rock star, Richie Valens, killed in a plane crash. That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.